right, everybody. Recording is live.
All right, thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to this year's annual Statewide Committee of Blind Vendors meeting. Today is Tuesday, September 14th, 2021. I just want to welcome everyone who has participated in today's meeting. I think it's important that we come together and share, I'd say, the things that really mean the most to the program, and that's obviously the operation and our intent to provide opportunity to all of you moving forward during these very difficult times. So I thank you all for taking the time to participate in today's meeting. So before I start, I want to pass it on to Chairman Haley to some house rules and have a few words before we take an attendance.
Sure. Welcome, everybody. As Tyrell said, it's been a tough year. Hopefully it gets better in 2021-22. Brian already started six to mute, if you didn't catch that. That gets rid of any background noise that you might be mower in my backyard right now, so I'll be muting a little bit. And then star six to speak. And even that, just try not to talk over everybody. Remember, this is it's an operators meeting, but it's also a committee meeting. So it's the committee having a meeting with operators.
Alexa, cancel the 9:30 alarm.
And then any other operators that are on the line, you may speak under open forum at the end of the meeting, but in between, unless there's direct questions. You know, we have a guest speaker today, so if there's direct questions or something, you can alert me or Tyrell to see if you're heard. But it's a committee meeting, just remember that. And I think that's it, Tyrell.
All right. Thank you. So we can jump right into attendance. So let's start off with the administration. Brian Sigmund.
I am present.
Andrew Norton. I'm not sure who's joining. Zach Moore.
I am present, sorry.
Okay, no problem. Lori St. Amant. Myself, Tyrell Sampson, present. Tracy Moore.
Present.
Nick Faenza. Joel Garcia.
Present.
Jesse Toll, I believe is not.
I'm here, Tyrell.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jesse. Good morning. David Walsh.
Good morning. Present.
Okay. BEP Committee Chairman Keith Haley.
Present.
Vice Chairman Chad Farr.
Present.
Amos Fatorma. Shelley McDermott. Carmela Ferreira.
Shelly's here.
All right, so Shelly's here. Carmela Ferreira.
Present, yes, here.
Stephen Hillier. David Pelagi.
Present. I am present.
Stephen Hillier's present, okay. Tony Ford.
I'm here.
Okay. Angel Torres.
I'm present.
Yolanda Dope. Frank Roberts.
Yolanda's here.
Okay, let's double back. Is Yolanda here?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Frank Roberts.
Here.
Keith DeLeo. Mike Heaney. Lloyd Montague. Ellen Schrammick.
Yes, I'm here.
All right, Lloyd's here. Charles Cody. Linda Lee Hernandez. Adam Fairbanks.
Here.
Prendergast?
Here.
Rich Braccia?
I'm here.
Gigi Yanez Hamburger? Sophie Ramirez? Jazz Marie DeJesus? Ken Clark? Jeremy Bailey? Barbara Miller?
Present.
Jim Ferguson?
Here.
Okay. And we will have guest speaker Katrina McDonald joining us soon for a 9:30 presentation. I believe Katrina stated she was going to try to call in around 9:20. So I asked the committee if it's okay that let's proceed with the item on the agenda, maybe moving forward to the minutes of the last meeting on June 1st for committee vote.
Yes, the minutes of the last meeting were presented to the committee. So can I get a committee member to make a motion to accept those minutes? Any committee member, just unmute.
I make a motion to accept.
Okay, that's Chad. Can I get a second?
I'll second it.
Sorry to interrupt. Could I please have you guys use your first and last names for the purpose of meeting minutes?
Sure. The first person was Chad Barr, and then I need someone on a second. Two people walked over each other.
I'll second it, Dave Pelagi.
Perfect. So I've got a motion on the floor. Motion seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor of accepting the minutes of the last meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say no. Any abstentions? And the motion carries.
Filled my fiscal position, so fact, just looking at all of the expenditures, which included the payroll, it was about, we're at $897,000 in comparison to our expenditure of $1.4 million last year. So there are certainly some savings in the fact that some of our locations weren't resuming, in addition to I would also say, I think the $1.6 million increase has a lot to do with the fact that Pepsi's overall cost per unit has increased in comparison to Coke. So we may not be doing the volume just yet in sales, but however, we have a nice offset in the fact that Pepsi's retail cost to the consumer has increased, which ultimately gives us the increase in profitability in commission. So I'm certainly pleased with where we stand. Nothing to really, start jumping and doing anything crazy with the budget, but certainly it gives us confidence to know that should there be any facility or situation in which we truly feel as a program could be of the betterment of an operator moving forward, we may be able to be in a position to support that opportunity. Obviously, we'd have to always remain diligent as to seeking the, not so much seeking, but ensuring that if we don't expend over our ability as we move forward, anticipate facilities to resume in some capacity, which would then in turn increase our monthly expenditures out of our budget. But for now, I would say it is nice to see that we have a little money as a program moving forward, giving us the confidence to potentially get more business opportunity down the line. So, very, very pleasing information. I did hear the phone beep a couple times. May I ask who joined the call? Within the last minute or so?
Lori St. Ange.
Okay, Lori. All right, I just heard the phone.
Good morning, Katrina McDonald.
Good morning, Katrina. Hello, it's Tyrell. Welcome.
Hey, I'm here. That's Amos.
Oh, Amos, okay. Thank you, Amos. So, no further ado, we can certainly double back on the agenda and go with agenda item number 3, and that's the presentation presented by the NCSAB Policy Advisor, Katrina McDonald. Just to kind of give a little intro on Katrina, Katrina is an incredible advocate for the Randolph-Shepard program. Thinking back in December, Brian, I believe, participated in the virtual NCSAB conference, in which I believe at that time Katrina provided a presentation that Brian stated to me in conversation was remarkable. It left Brian in awe as to the information Katrina had provided at that time in regards to the Randolph-Shepard program, and I'm assuming a lot of it had to do with just at that time. Back in December, we were really in the heat of COVID, and so, every agency was seeking guidance as to what to do and, how we should operate and readjust our business opportunity to ensure, I should say, business opportunity for all of you moving forward in a manner that is in line with what we are to anticipate moving forward, maybe post-COVID or even during now at these times for some of you operators who are currently operating in times that of uncertainty. Me personally, shortly, just being in the position as a supervisor, I was impressed with Katrina just in the manner of the Randolph-Shepard program and the her ability to spearhead discussions on the PPP loans and the $20 million appropriation fund at that time, that now we know it as the Financial Relief and Restoration Payment. You know, I remember taking part of the call. I think most of us as the administration took part of the call, as well as the committee. And, you know, Katrina had really just guided everyone as to what to anticipate, and as far as the funds, and just really bringing clarity at that time as to the outcome of the PPP, well, I would say more or less the Financial Relief and Restoration Payment, because at that time, I believe the PPP loan was on its second wave, but there were still some questions. So, you know, she's just really, since then, you know, Katrina remains, to me, vitally important within this Randolph Shepherd program. You know, just seeking the clarity and mutual resolution between RSA and, I would say, state agencies. So, with that being said, I just want to welcome you, Katrina, to today's call. Certainly, I know you're extremely busy, and we are certainly thankful for you joining today's meeting.
Terrell, thank you so very much, and thank you to the elected committee and to all of the vendors and to Brian for inviting me. And Terrell, thank you for that really generous introduction. Clarity is a good thing, and we have not had a lot of it in the last 18 months, have we? So I will do my best to be offering a little more clarity today as well, and hopefully I will succeed in that. What I'll be talking about is drawing from research and strategies that lots of the other bigger food service organizations have invested a lot of time and energy and money that Randolph Shepherd as a program does not have to help their food service businesses and their vending businesses survive and thrive through the pandemic. And so the presentation I gave in December has been updated for the new place where we are in the pandemic, although, you know, sometimes it feels like we are perhaps turning a corner back into some of those darker days. And hopefully some of the research, some of the strategies that I'll be able to present today will be helpful to you. Some of these things that I will talk about represent really out-of-the-box ideas. Not all of them will be appropriate for Randolph Shepherd or for you and your particular facility. My goal in walking through this is not to presume to tell you what is best for your business, but to give you some ideas that might help you think about things in a different way. And if the ideas that I present aren't appropriate for your business, they might spark some ideas and creativity for solutions that are appropriate. But before I dive in with all of that, I need to take a moment to say, I do a lot of these presentations. I'm always glad to be talking with vendors, but the Connecticut program holds a particularly special place in my heart and makes me doubly excited to be joining you this morning. We are getting very close to 17 years ago when I flew down to Tennessee to the board meeting of the National State Agencies for the Blind. And walked into the room to be interviewed for the position of policy advisor to NCSAB. I was 8.5 months pregnant and had to talk the doctor into allowing me to fly for that interview. And I had not told anybody in advance how pregnant I was. I remember when the door opened and Brian's face was across the table, and needless to say, everyone in the room was surprised. I ended up being the most surprised when 12 hours after I got home from that trip and 3.5 weeks before my baby was due, I ended up going into labor. But I did also get the job working with NCSAB. Brian was the president of NCSAB at the in the year that I was hired. And Brian is the person introduced me first to Randolph Shepherd. My daughter is now going to be 17 in November. She's driving a car. We're looking at colleges. She wants to play basketball in college. Unfortunately, she's not good enough for the UConn team. But the UConn women's team also has a special place in my heart, not least because I also worked for Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro of New Haven. And we also need to take a moment today to give a shout out to all of you Connecticut vendors who joined Terry Smith in the call with Letty Medeiros in Rosa's office to talk about the impact of the pandemic on blind entrepreneurs and to persuade the DeLauro office and the Congresswoman to go to bat to secure that $20 million appropriation for blind vendors. Blind vendors across the country owe you a debt of gratitude, and thank you for doing that really important work that has benefited everybody. So when I left my office at the beginning of the pandemic on March 11th, 2020, and I think at the time that you were meeting with Letty the following fall, we all kind of thought and hoped the pandemic would be over by now. And we definitely thought, even if the pandemic's not completely over, we looked forward to this past summer as a turning point with vaccinations. For some people and businesses and for some blind vendors, things did pick up substantially over the summer. So vendors with rest areas across the country, as an example, saw increased travel, and vendors with facilities in state office buildings in states with governors who are strongly supportive of reopening in person saw some restoration of income as well. But for a lot of other folks, especially people with vending machines in federal office buildings and in states like Connecticut that were more cautious about a return to work, things have stayed very slow. And I think now we're all realizing, with new variants that continue to develop, Lambda and Mu apparently are spreading out there behind Delta, and certainly Delta is still spreading, we're all realizing that we're in this for the long haul. Movie theaters, restaurants, and airlines, which saw increased sales in June and July, are seeing dips in their August sales and dips in September as worries about Delta variant spread. Paramount Pictures just announced that they're delaying the release of Top Gun and Mission Impossible 7. Apologies to all of the Mission Impossible fans out there. Garth Brooks and Nine Inch Nails are just two of the performers who are canceling planned tours. And just last week, Medtronic, which makes medical devices, announced that it saw a significant slowdown in its sales of medical devices in late July into August, as people are again postponing surgeries with the surge of COVID hitting hospitals. My company is a small mirror of all of those larger trends. So we have three full-time people, and we're going through a transition. A staffer who's been with us for 4 years is leaving.
Mine's been canceled.
Hello?
Oh, sorry.
That's right. So we've hired a replacement who's overlapping a little bit, coming in to be trained. And we decided that since we're onboarding a new staffer and we're all vaccinated, that we would come into the office. This is the first time that we've been working in the office since March 11, 2020. And when we left the office on March 11, 2020, we did not expect that we would not be back for another 18. We're still only coming in 3 days a week. I don't know when we will go back to the office full-time in person, and maybe we'll never go back in time in person full-time. So we're not alone in that, as many of you know and are experiencing. Capital Systems, which is the big security company, tracks movement in and out of office buildings with the security swipe cards that people use to access their workspaces. And Castle is saying that nationwide, an average of only one-third of office employees, and this is public and private sector, are back at least some days in the office. Many companies that had planned to fully reopen their offices after Labor Day are pushing back those plans. Some have announced that they're not bringing people back to their offices until 2022. Specifically looking at federal office buildings, very few have opened beyond essential workers, or at least opened fully beyond essential workers. The Office of Personnel Management says that at the peak of the pandemic, 60% of federal workers were working full-time remote, and 40% were either full-time in the office or working in the office part-time and remotely part-time. That might ring true to those of you who have vending in federal buildings, but the percentage of employees in any given building varies widely depending on the geographic location, the agency, and the type of workers. And there is a lot of pressure to get federal employees and state employees back into the office in person because customer services have plummeted through remote work. At the federal level, agencies submitted return to office plans to the White House in time to meet a July 19 deadline, and they had to lay out how they would begin to phase out remote work for hundreds of thousands of employees after Labor Day, with a full return to federal offices planned by the end of the year. Those plans that they had to turn in mid-July included strategies for office cleaning, coronavirus testing, staggered work schedules, repositioned desks that allowed for social distancing, all of that kind of stuff, as well as outlining which jobs would be eligible for continued full and part-time telework. All of those plans are now having to be reconsidered because of the Delta variant. And the policy that the president announced last week, requiring all federal employees and contractors to be vaccinated, is an effort to balance pressures to return to the office and pressures to keep both employees and the public that they interact with safe. As a side note, we are still waiting for additional details about the president's announcement for vaccinations. It appears that federal contractors with contracts that total less than $250,000 a year will not be subject to the vaccination requirements. There are some conditions under which Randolph Shepard vendors, because you don't have an exact contract for services, you're providing vending and employees are using their own money to pay you. There are some cases under which Randolph Shepard vendors are not covered by other policies that apply to contractors, and so we are waiting for additional information about whether and how and when this might apply to Randolph Shepard vendors. Having said all of that, it is very likely that no government agency, federal, state, or local, will ever return to having all of their employees full-time in the office. Now, in 2018 and 2019, when the General Services Administration had to submit telework reports to Congress, it said that it had already reduced its office space by 40% because of increasing telework by federal government employees. And the General Services Administration predicted that it could save about $110 billion in the next decade by having currently eligible employees telework half the time. If people are not coming into an office building, then they can use what you call hoteling, sharing offices and cubicles instead of giving everyone their own office and cube, to reduce office space by as much as 50%. And that's happening in the private sector as well as in the public sector. So the point has been made. We're never going back to pre-pandemic normal numbers of employees in government buildings. because the numbers were going down before the pandemic.